Hello and welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. I'm Viv Davis. It's the 7th of April 2014, and today's interview is with Marcus Eberhardt, Assistant Professor at the University of Nottingham. We discuss Marcus's recent presentation at the 2014 Royal Economic Society Annual Conference, which was based on research conducted with Andrea Presbitero. The title of the presentation was Links Between Debt and Growth: New Historical and Cross-Country Evidence of the Dangers of a One-Size-Fits-All Approach. The authors conclude that there is no convincing proof that austerity works. I began the interview by asking Marcus to explain the background to his presentation.
Sure. So there's quite a few ingredients, and perhaps the one thing that I imagine most listeners will know about is what I call the Reinhardt and Rogoff saga. So Carmen Reinhardt and Kenneth Rogoff wrote a book in 2009 called This Time is Different, quite an ironic title because the implication of their research was that this time is not different, this time being global financial crisis. They were interested in showing that there's a consistent story of analyzing crises, financial crises and other crises, macroeconomic crises, over the last 200 years. And they've provided a great set of data that goes along with their book. Now, the paper that made them most famous, I guess, was a conference paper published in the Papers and Proceedings of the American Economic Review 2010, which basically grouped observations in different groups depending on how large the debt-to-GDP ratio was. So you could have three lower ones up to 25, 50%, 90%, and then a group above 90%. And then they just looked at the average growth rate that countries experienced when they were in these different regimes. And what that showed is that once you go above a level of 90% debt to GDP, these average growth rates were significantly lower than in any of the lower regimes. And this is what subsequently people called the non-linearity or the threshold in the relationship between debt and growth. And interestingly, this is also what a lot of politicians on both sides of the Atlantic have used to justify austerity measures. And the rationale is simply, well, if you have very high debt, it's going to have a detrimental effect on your economic performance, on your growth. So let's get that debt level down. And we're talking about public debt, so let's pursue some fiscal austerity. This was in 2010. Politicians were using this as a justification. And then last year, a graduate student at a university in the US came along and found that the very basic, very descriptive analysis that had been done by Reinhardt and Rogoff had made a few mistakes. And in theory, the story could have ended there because, as I said, he was just a graduate student at a university and they are Harvard professors. But then something else happened. Bloggers and very influential people in the policy world picked this up, and really, it was almost like a witch hunt for Reinhardt and Rogoff. Now, the research I'm doing in this paper I'm presenting here today, but also in other work on the debt and growth relationship, is finding that Reinhardt and Rogoff are wrong. But I still think this paper by the graduate students from the US is not telling a fundamentally different story from what Reinhardt and Rogoff have found. So they are sticking by their guns, but now they're quite vilified in these academic circles.
So that's the background for your topic. And what about the background for your research?
It's just about the data that is being used and what sort of assumptions we're making about kind of the process that is the debt-to-growth relationship. So one ingredient is the idea of heterogeneity. That would mean if we're analyzing a very diverse set of countries, that maybe the relationship between debt and growth differs whether you were the Democratic Republic of Congo or whether you're the United States. On the one hand, a country with very low levels of institutions, very low financial development, and on the other hand, the most powerful economy in the world. So this is the idea that maybe we shouldn't analyze all countries thrown together in one pot with the same model, but allow for differences across countries. The second ingredient is sadly quite a technical one. So this is related to the time series properties of the data. There's these issues called non-stationarity and co-integration. So I'm going to use an analogy that hopefully will bring out what this is about. So my young father and my daughter is now enjoying running around in the park. And so if we looked at her progress over time in the park, this looks like a random walk in the sense that at any point in time, she might turn about or turn left or turn right. So if I drew on a map how she progresses over time, this looks entirely random. Now, I'm in charge of looking after her, so I, quote-unquote, follow her. So if you looked at my evolution over time, my path, this would also look quite random. These two aspects are non-stationarity. Macro variables don't evolve in a random fashion, so it's not a perfect allegory, but they're sort of random walks with drift. So at any one point in time, the GDP can go up or go down in an almost random fashion over time. At least that's how econometricians look at it. Now, what is cointegration? At any point in time, I will be not necessarily very close to my daughter because I might see her from a distance and I'm happy that she's safe and so on. So if I measure at each point in time the distance between us, it will differ quite a lot. But over the long run, we can compare the two paths. So in the long run, the average distance stays stable between us because I follow her or she follows me. And that's cointegration.
So why is this particularly interesting?
The problem is that once variables have this property of non-stationarity, our standard toolbox of empirical analysis breaks down. So the example people often use to show this is to estimate the relationship between UK GDP and rainfall in Brazil. There shouldn't be any relationship, but you get this strong, statistically significant relationship, and it's a spurious relationship. So in order to analyze variables that are non-stationary, you have to establish cointegration. And that's something that basically in this literature, nobody has done. Now, the final ingredient relates to these non-linearities or thresholds. So the idea that maybe above a certain level of debt to GDP, the relationship between debt and growth changes. Now, unfortunately, what I've just introduced, non-stationarity and cointegration, they are linear concepts. So you can only analyze linear relationships with this. What I'm doing in this paper I'm presenting today is I'm extending the analysis to basically cover nonlinear processes. And we need a new toolbox, very recently developed by researchers at University of Carlos III in Madrid and Oxford, and it's called summability and co-summability. So it's a very long introduction. But essentially, what I'm analyzing is four OECD countries, the US, Great Britain, Sweden, and Japan. And I'm looking at simply the relationship between debt to GDP ratio and their GDP per capita over time. And all I'm interested in is, are they moving together in the long run?
So are they?
I have tried a lot of different combinations, a lot of different approaches to model this non-linearity, and nowhere have I found any evidence that these variables move together. So most of the literature has worried about the causality issue. So does high debt cause lower growth, or does, you know, if you grow a lot, you can have higher debt, or you can pay back your debt. So we are not sure which way the causality goes. But because of this very specific property of the data, the non-stationarity, this should actually just be the final test that we do. In between, we need to establish first whether these two variables actually move together in the long run. And since I don't find any co-movement, I'm not even making any causal statements, because it's a prerequisite that they move together for me then to be able to move on to say, well, debt causes growth or growth causes debt. So in a way, the paper finishes quite abruptly, because I'm very narrowly interested in this relationship. Can I find a long-run equilibrium between debt and growth?
So where does this leave the austerity debate then?
I'm very cautious with making sort of statements based on this research, but the policy debate has really been about the idea of a causal relationship running from higher debt to lower growth. So the implication is we need to implement austerity measures to get our public debt down. And as a result, we will maintain, you know, long-term stability and sustainable growth over the long term. Now, this whole idea of austerity working is based on very shaky grounds if these two variables do not constitute a long-run equilibrium, if they don't move together. It's a bit like, you know, you look at one random child walking in the park and you look at me and you're saying, oh, those two are non-stationary variables and they co-move, yet I'm only following my own daughter. I'm not following some other child. So it's a bit like looking at two variables that are not co-integrated and then making statements about causality.
So what should policymakers take from your work?
I think there's a general call to be a little more cautious. And I don't want to point the finger at individual politicians because we know it's sort of done across the board. It's just the recognition that economists in particular and other social scientists as well are working with data and with models and empirical results that are subject to serious doubt. So I can compare this with the pharmaceutical industry, where we can test whether a drug works or doesn't work with a randomized controlled trial. And in microeconomics, especially in development economics, but also labor economics, we have the same kind of methods. We're doing randomized controlled trials with people. But in macroeconomics, this is not possible. So it's just that I feel policymakers should recognize that there's still a lot of academic debate, especially over this does austerity work question. And their judgment is based on this work from 2010, primarily Reinhardt and Rogoff, but also others, that has been seriously questioned in the literature. Yet I have seen a lot of backlash against, personally, Rogoff and Carmen Reinhardt, and also this part of the literature. But I haven't seen anybody say to politicians, well, your judgment that austerity works is based on very, very shaky grounds. So politicians seem to have picked this result, and now the result has changed, but the politicians haven't really changed their policies or they haven't really changed their tune.
I look forward to the session very much. Marcus Eberhardt, thanks very much indeed.
Great. Thank you.